BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman and welcome to the Football Daily. Yes, the Football Daily on a Sunday. It is now a 7-day-a-week podcast, so there'll be a new podcast that drops every Sunday morning detailing all of Saturday's action. During this episode, you'll hear from Jose Mourinho, Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola, because the main headlines are as follows. Mourinho made a winning return to the Premier League after Tottenham beat West Ham. Liverpool narrowly beat Crystal Palace 2-1. Leicester continued their dominant form at Brighton. Arsenal left it late to get a draw at home to Southampton. And Manchester City beat Chelsea. An awful lot to get on with. Let's do this.
This is the Football Daily Podcast with Mark Chapman.
So let's start the pod with Jose Mourinho and his return as a Premier League manager in charge of Tottenham. They got a 3-2 win at the London Stadium against West Ham. Our correspondent John Murray was there. What did Mourinho do to get that result then, John?
Well, afterwards he said, "It's not about me, but no away win in the Premier League for 10 months for Tottenham." Mourinho pitches up and wins his first match in charge away from home. Well, he didn't make wholesale changes. I think most importantly, he got results out of Dele Alli, who Mourinho actually asked this week if it was him or Dele's brother who'd been turning up for Spurs at times over the last couple of seasons. He picked Winks alongside Dier in midfield. Maurizio Pochettino hadn't done that this season. He left out Sissoko and Eriksen. Both came on. And they played on the West Ham lack of confidence as well. The goalkeeper, Roberto, had another poor day. He was ridiculed at times by his own supporters. And Tottenham won the match with three goals from the front three. Son, Moura and Kane in the first 50 minutes. Dele Alli played his part in the first two, including a wonderful piece of improvisation in the build-up to the second. And West Ham's two late goals from Antonio and Ogbonna deprived Mourinho of a clean sheet. But those goals weren't fooling anyone.
OK, let's hear from the new Tottenham manager then.
Dele was here. The Dele that everybody loves, the Dele that many clubs were trying to buy a few years ago. This is Dele. I took him off minutes 70 something because I felt that that energy was coming down a little bit. I brought Christian because I thought he could give us some stability in a period where we need the ball. But really, really pleased, and I'm happy that he was chosen for the man of the match, because it's a good feeling for a boy that in previous matches was staying at home and sending his brother.
Can you tell us, Jose, what it was specifically that you asked him to do this week that you feel that he hasn't been doing?
I can't, because that's about positional play. That's about... I leave with you to try to analyse, but I'm not going to give ammunition to my enemies. No chance.
But he did it.
He did it. He did it in a perfect way. And by the defensive point of view, by the positional point of view, by the attacking point of view, and also by the attitude point of view. So, for example, the situation of Lucas' goal, where the ball is almost out and he goes there and he fights for the ball and he turns and he's on the floor and he turns in there and he slides and he's coordinated. But he brought... I think that action says everything about the mentality he brought to the game.
And what was it that made you go with Winks and Dier in there together for this match?
What made me was exactly the positional play of the four attacking players. I needed one midfielder that was more positional, and I needed one midfielder that was more a passer of the ball. So, of course, when I see Musa is a very good player, but different than my needs. So I need that stability from Dier, and I need the kid to move the ball faster, and also positionally, but to move the ball faster and to find the attacking players in the positions we want them to find the ball.
Danny Murphy watching the game for Match of the Day and listening to that. He makes that sound quite simple and common sense-like.
Well, it is. I've been saying for weeks, a balance of the formation was right. Back to a formation the players know. Round pegs in round holes. Lucas Moura plays on the right. He's got good pace. He's a goal threat. He put his four best goal threats on the pitch. Dele Alli's a number 10. Always plays his best stuff as a number 10. He's got two players behind him protecting him. So he's got more of a platform to go forward and not worry about getting back. Although he did work tremendously hard. And Son's had nearly all his best games over the years and made his name on the left-hand side. They had runners. They had pace. The six behind stopped going forward. The full-backs played defensively. and they let those four cause havoc, and West Ham couldn't cope with them. The front four players had pace, energy, and creativity. It was a good performance.
This is not a comment on Pochettino himself or even Mourinho, really. But bearing in mind you just said that, you know, the square pegs in square holes, then do you think, you know, as a manager increases their longevity at a club, they start to tinker and do things that overcomplicate?
Little bit, yeah. And I think also when you have a few bad results, you start thinking, well, maybe that what I was doing was wrong, so you tweak it, and then you have a couple of players who aren't quite at it, so you give them a kick up the backside and leave them out and bring someone else in. You know, the formation changed too often in recent times for me under Poch. That's not to, you know, he's done a wonderful job, we know that, but the performances in the last few months have been so erratic. You know, they've not looked like a Poch team. They've not looked organised and energised like they did in years gone by. And Jose's just gone in and gone, look, 4-2-3-1, you all know how to play it. It's balanced. The fullbacks stay in a little bit. You can support, but don't go flying forward. You two sit in there. And the four just against, yes, a poor West Ham side. Let's say that first and foremost. But that four are his best four goal threats. And they were all on, and they all caused a threat today. And Dele Alli was great. He was right.
From a seventh Premier League game now without a win for West Ham, here's Mark Noble.
You can't concede goals. Not ones like we've conceded in this league, because you get punished. And if you don't score yourself, like we ain't scoring, we ain't scoring goals, we're conceding them. The only way in the table is down. And we've gone from starting the season really well to coming off it massively. And it's partly my job and the managers and the players that are in the dressing room to turn it around. So the only way is to grind it out, work hard. I know everyone sees it, but in football, in the 15 years I've played, it hasn't changed. Football hasn't changed. You've got to run around, you've got to work hard, you've got to put tackles in, you've got to win your headers and let the quality take care of itself, and at the minute we're not doing it.
Mark Noble, they were poor, weren't they, John Murray?
They were. Manuel Pellegrini said that the home crowd getting on the back of the goalkeeper Roberto didn't help. He said they need to improve both attacking and defending. I'd say you can say that again. There were boos for him when he replaced Diop with Sanchez and moved Rice into central defence. They've got Chelsea away next. Their next home match is another London derby against Arsenal. And the slump is alarming. They were talking at the start of the season about maybe pushing for the top six. They were third in late September, but 1 point from the last 18, 3 points above the relegation zone as we speak. In the football world in which we live, his position is precarious. And he's not the only one.
Well, and that was going to be my question. How many clubs do you think, given the results in the Premier League, how many clubs do you think will be having some interesting conversations at boardroom level, given who is available?
Yeah, well, I mean, you'd have to say West Ham, you would have to say Everton after what happened today. And, you know, that conversation will continue at Southampton, won't it?
Will it continue at Arsenal?
And, well, possibly.
Only because Arsenal's Twitter feed tweets out this thing where they have their pundits give their reaction to the result. And I think one of the tweets they put out was much better performance in the second half. The last time I looked, there were 270 replies to that tweet, of which several had, guess who they had photoshopped on next to an Arsenal crest?
Oh, go on.
Mauricio Pochettino. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I saw a picture, somebody showed me a picture of the Emirates at kickoff and lots of empty seats. And that is always something that will ring alarm bells for the hierarchy at a football club.
That's our correspondent, John Murray. Danny, busy afternoon for 3 o'clock. So what else caught your eye?
Arsenal, how they got away with the 2-2, you'll have to see it to believe it. Some of Southampton's chances that they missed were, I mean, criminal, really, in terms of that, you know, creating their own problems. They had overload after overload, 3v2s, 1v1s. I mean, they still got booed off Arsenal and drew the game. That tells you everything. Liverpool, again, didn't perform particularly well. Palace played brilliantly and lost. Same old story there.
Just on Palace, by the way, and I know we've had this conversation so many times about the organisation that Roy Hodgson does with his teams and shape and so on and so forth. In recent weeks, they have conceded a lot from set pieces, which he can't be happy about.
No, he won't be. And the Liverpool winner was sloppy.
Yeah.
It was sloppy. But you know what, Chappers, they put that much in. You know when the concentration levels just drop sometimes late in a game because they've put that much in? They'd cause Liverpool so many problems with their energy and their discipline. Sometimes you understand it more late in games when you lose discipline on set plays. But Liverpool, to be fair, get the job done again somehow.
Cheers, Danny. Thanks, mate. Thank you very much. That was Match of the Day's Danny Murphy on the pod. Let's go to Selhurst Park next. Ian Dennis, as you've heard Danny Murphy talk about Liverpool getting another win this afternoon.
Yes, but this was a stern examination for the league leaders against a Crystal Palace side who were superb and certainly deserved something for their efforts. But Liverpool have a resilience and a belief. They lacked a cutting edge in the first half, a half where the talking point was VAR, because Palace thought they'd scored just before half-time. A Tompkins header at the far post disallowed after VAR intervention because of a push from Ayew on Lovren in the penalty area. But in the second half, Liverpool improved. Mane's left-footed shot in off a post gave them a 49th minute lead. Palace, though, played really well and were causing problems. Townsend, Schlupp, Benteke all went close before a well-worked goal from Zaha saw them deservedly level with just 8 minutes left. However, 3 minutes later, Firmino scrambled in a second to extend Liverpool's undefeated run to 30 matches, just one game off, equaling a club record.
Let's go and get reaction from Jurgen Klopp live with George Cummins.
Jurgen, congratulations. Palace always give you a tricky game here, so you must be very relieved to get out here with 3 points.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Relieved is good, but happy as well, because I knew before the game it will be unbelievably tough. Boys came back on Thursday, and from Thursday on we had one half a session to bring 8 different match plans from all over the world, bring them together again for one. The match plan for this game today against Palace, I said already, which is anyway a different, obviously difficult place for us, and started well in the game. But then you saw we were pretty much over the whole 90 minutes not compact enough. So last line too deep, that doesn't help. So the distances were too big, especially in the moments when Zaha and Townsend got the ball. Usually we double it with three opportunities actually, from the striker up front, or from the midfielder in the centre, or from the centre half. So, but because the last time was too deep, nobody was close enough to be there in time, and so they had these moments. Not really chances, but a lot of set pieces. They were dangerous, and that gave them a proper feeling, I think confidence as well, that they have these moments. And we had our moments as well, big chances, not too many, but very big. I think first half one, second half, Bobby really big. Scored the 2 goals. Won the game, all good. You cannot have 37 points after 13 matches if you are always brilliant. That never happened before.
Ugly win, would you say?
Not sure if it's ugly. It's just necessary. It's we showed resilience again. I saw a lot of nice football things in the game, both teams. It was not ugly, but I know what you mean. It's rather on an average day, you still have to win games. But I don't want to talk too often about that, because it looks like we have to explain it too often why we win a game. I think there are a lot of reasons why we won the game. And I don't think it was ugly. It was just difficult. And to keep it going will be difficult. And it's only when we wait, get up in the morning, feel sensation, and have the best breakfast ever. Another little nap between breakfast and lunch. Get for lunch. Wonderful weather, perfect. Not too warm, not too cold. No rain. Blah blah blah. No wind. If you only win these games, then it'll be really difficult.
Matthew Upson, listening to that. First of all, I want to know what they have for breakfast, because it sounds like he's got them a lovely breakfast lined up tomorrow. But I find found a really interesting interview there, because what he's trying to say is, what I'm assuming he's trying to say is Matthew, that it's battling and it's necessary, but it's not ugly. And they're not lucky. I think that's what I'm trying to read between the lines there. You know, you have to win football matches.
Oh, it's got absolutely nothing to do with luck. I mean, I felt on an average day, you've still got to win matches. I thought that's a great line, because that's exactly what Liverpool did. And to say an ugly win, well, an ugly win is more, you know, playing long, direct football maybe, or punting the ball up the field. Liverpool never looked like doing that. They're very efficient and smooth at times. It was just a bit disjointed, I think, going forwards, the lack of Salah and the imbalance of Oxlade-Chamberlain coming in, who did well and has been playing very well. But he started with Mane on the right-hand side and switched it from the start of the game. And it didn't quite have the same flow as what Liverpool normally have. But, you know, it's a fantastic win, you know, given the circumstances.
But with that interview, do you think he's trying to not protect his players, but he doesn't want a certain image going out, I suppose, of how Liverpool are getting 3 points after 3 points after 3 points. And as he said, he mentioned 37 points from 13 games. You don't do that by nicking it.
No, absolutely not. It's not nicking. It's not luck. It's not by chance. All these moments that are created in the game are created by the team and by the players and from the manager's work. So everybody's in tune with it. I think he wants to move away from the fact of it being an ugly win. If anything, it's a great win. You know, these are the moments I said at the end of the game. These are those championship moments away at Selhurst Park on a November Saturday, up against it, just gone one goal down with 8 minutes left, and your team's got the resilience to win. It's a brilliant thing. It's an amazing thing to watch and to have in your team. And I think he's trying to shine the light on how what a strength that is for Liverpool.
Thank you, Matthew and Ian. The tea time game was at the Etihad, Manchester City against Chelsea. To round everything up, Conor McNamara and the former Manchester City midfielder Michael Brown.
Thanks, Chappers. What an entertaining game we had here. This was one of those 90 minutes. You just couldn't take your eyes off it. End-to-end action. You felt another goal could come at any moment. And it's Manchester City who have beaten Chelsea by 2-1. Kevin De Bruyne and Mahrez with the goals for City. Chelsea's goal from N'Golo Kante, his third in 4 Premier League games for him. This is an important win, Michael, for Pep Guardiola. It's been a long wait since Manchester City's last game when they lost at Anfield.
Yeah, a long wait. And we were all talking about would Edison be back and sort of which team would he play. They had some good spells at Anfield, but it wasn't to be. So the reaction was here against a Chelsea side who have been going well, and they pushed City all the way. I think one thing that Manchester City will take from it is the amount of chances that Chelsea created. Again, defensively, they weren't sound. It was that one long ball over that Kante managed to get in. So still work to do defensively. They've seen it out, they got the points, and they finally get on with things and get that international break away from them.
It could have been more comfortable for Manchester City. Raheem Sterling had a goal disallowed by VAR right at the very end that would have made it 3-1. As a mark of respect, I guess, for Chelsea's performance was how City were being forced to waste time at the end. When Aguero went off, he wasted as long as he dared. I'm actually surprised he wasn't booked for time wasting. But that shows how Chelsea were threatening City.
They were, and you were expecting Martin Atkinson, the referee, to actually say, you know, come on, Sergio Aguero, get off. He just held his hand on his wrist and it wasn't really good enough, really. It was a long, long walk. They had to kill the game, seeing Gundogan at times, just slowing the game down. But, you know, that was what Chelsea were doing. They were creating opportunities and, you know, they've got quality. They've got energy. They want to keep pressing. That high-energy team will always cause problems late on in games.
OK, let's hear from Pep Guardiola. He's been speaking to Steve Wilson.
Pep, congratulations. You're playing against a very, very good young side there who played some good stuff in the first half, and you had to be very disciplined.
Well, they have one young player, well, two young players, yeah, with Tomori and Avram. The other one is inexperienced and incredible quality players, because Spiliqueta, Zuma, Emerson, the three players in the middle, Pulisic, the biggest star for USA, and William. So they are incredible top side, so incredible team. We knew it, but you won't beat them.
You must be very proud then that you could come from behind in the manner in which you did.
Absolutely. It's always a typical game for the high level, so demanding physicality. They are incredible, fires on top. But our back four plays so good. And in the most difficult moment of the game, we score in action, the counterattack. But after they had an action at the end, when we lose the ball in the position for our tiredness, but we create enough chances for the last pass to score more goals.
How big a problem is the injury to Sergio Aguero?
Yeah, hopefully tomorrow we'll know exactly. First impression is not good. I think it's injured, muscular injury. But we'll see tomorrow exactly.
Thank you, Pep.
You're very
well played.
So this game and this result, Michael, leaves Manchester City 9 points behind Liverpool. It almost feels, if that had become 12, if City had lost, it really would have been all over. I mean, it's a huge gulf anyway. How do you see City's participation in the title race now?
It is a huge gap. And you're sort of saying, which side can do it? Would 12 have been too many? Yes, probably. I think psychologically, it would have been a huge dent to have not won the game. But that's what Liverpool keep doing. They have the advantage. They have the start. They put in the pressure on Manchester City. It was 10 points with the game in hand, so 7 points last season. Now it's 9. This team can do it if they click, but they need to be much better than what they are at the moment.
Thanks, Michael. So, Chappers, highly entertaining game here. Manchester City beating Chelsea by 2-1.
The Football Daily from BBC Sport and BBC Five Live.
It was a dominant win for Leicester on Saturday. They beat Brighton 2-0 at the Amex. We can hear now from Brendan Rodgers talking to Henry Moran.
Well, Brendan, another victory. tough in the conditions, tough against the spirited Brighton side. What did you make of today?
Well, I thought it was a very, very good 3 points. We said before the game that this was going to be one of our toughest games of the season. You know, Brighton are playing very, very well under Graham, in particular at home. You see by the results they have and you see by how they want to play. So they make you really work for it. But I thought we started the game very well. Could have went a few goals in front. Then they come into it probably last 10 minutes of the first half. They started the second half well. And you expect that because away from home, you're never going to have it all your own way. However, we stayed very compact, stayed very concentrated. And then, but always looked a real threat in the game when we attacked. So we get the first goal on a great counter-attack once we've defended the corner. And from that moment, we played very well in managing the game and got another goal, of course, and could have had more.
So that was Brendan Rodgers talking to Henry Moran. How would you describe Leicester's performance, Henry?
Well, it was comprehensive. It was deserved, the 3 points, a third successive away win, a fifth win overall. And in the end, Brighton created very little. It could have been more for the visitors. The goal was coming from Iosi Perez, another from Jamie Vardy. Good chances missed in the second half from the visitors. The opener, well, it was very much a trademark Leicester goal, a lightning quick breakaway. Vardy unselfishly squaring for Iosi Perez to convert. And as thrillingly rapid as the first was, the second was slightly more protracted. Damari Gray fouled in the box. Vardy with the penalty chance. His effort was saved by Matt Ryan. James Maddison nodded in the rebound. Cue a minute or so of celebrations before the big screen flashed purple. A VAR check for a penalty. Replay suggesting encroachment from both sets of players. The outcome eventually a retake. This time it was Vardy who had the final say. Jamie Vardy sending Ryan the wrong way and putting the game out of sight. He and James Maddison missed big chances towards the end to make it more. But Leicester, they will feel that they had to battle for this result. They did both, and the celebrations at the end suggest they know how important this win could be.
A few of the production team gave you a round of applause for that, Henry.
Thanks, Chappers.
Others didn't, but some did. Henry Moran at Brighton, where Leicester have won 2-0. Right, another miserable afternoon for Everton, beaten 2-0 at Goodison by Norwich. Marco Silva afterwards spoke to Juliet Ferrington.
Marco, a really tough afternoon for you.
Really disappointing, of course. Frustration afternoon for all of us. Myself in first of all, of course. Disappointing afternoon for the players, for our fans, and all their reaction during the game as well. Because we didn't deserve to win this game. We didn't deserve at all to win the football match. Of course, we know like we lost. Not good at all, the first half, too slow, not intensity at all. Low intensity, low pace, not the mobility we should put on the pitch to disorganize them. Second half we start quicker, a bit faster as well, but after we come some mistakes we made and obligate us to be more uncomfortable during the match and them with more confidence as well. And after the first mistake we made when they scored, everything comes more difficult for us. Of course, we had some chances to equalize the game. Possible everything will be different, but we didn't equalize. And of course, one more mistake, they scored the second.
When you say you didn't deserve to win the game, as a manager, how does that make you feel? Because there is pressure on you, isn't there?
Yeah, but we have to, when you are asking my opinion, what I saw in the game, I'm not here to hide nothing from myself, is my opinion, because when you look for one football match and we didn't do enough to win the game, we have to be clear, to be honest what you are seeing. Just in this way my players, they can feel as well what was the truth, what's happened really there inside the pitch as well, and was clear we didn't perform in the level can put us to win the game.
When we saw your face at the end of the game, well, when they scored their second, Norwich, you look shell-shocked, you look crestfallen. So where does this leave you now in terms of your own future?
No, because, okay, we lost, we conceded the second goal. One game we prepared the game to win, we talked, and it's clear we had the conditions to win the football match. When we conceded the second goal, again, the way we conceded as well, of course, it's not a matter of to be in shock or not. I was unhappy, I was not happy at all, and possible my face, I don't know was my face, but possible my face showed that to you, because I was unhappy.
This is the Football Daily Podcast with Mark Chapman.
Let's go to the Emirates now, where Arsenal left it late to salvage a point at home to Southampton. But John Akers, that doesn't stop the discontent around the club.
No, they were fuming, the fans, at the final whistle, despite the fact that they got a point. I'm just in a little radio cupboard just off the corridor near the tunnel. I'll tell you what, it was exhausting to watch. Was it exhausting to watch, fellow radio journalists?
Absolutely. Yes.
You see, they all agree. Yes. They all agree with me. I was expecting an oh no, it wasn't then, being Panto season. we're just waiting for Unai Emery now. But how much pressure did that Lacazette equaliser take off him with just 90 seconds remaining? I've had a chat with Ralf Hasenhüttl, who said that it was difficult for it not to feel like a defeat in some ways. The chances that Southampton had near the end, Dineppo came off the bench and missed two great chances, Willock clearing one brilliantly off the line. James Ward-Prowse missed a penalty but scored the follow-up. He said it's still a good point, 2-2, even though they are a bit flat in the dressing room, and they would have taken it before the game, a point at Arsenal, and there are signs that they're going to be okay, that they're playing decent stuff after that 9-0 defeat, of course, to Leicester a few weeks ago. Ings gave them the lead brilliantly, in off the post. Lacazette with an equaliser in the first half. James Ward-Prowse with that follow-up. And then Lacazette, as I said, 90 seconds from time. Doesn't tell the whole story, though. So many chances for Southampton. They had 20 efforts at goal. And Pepe came on as a sub at half-time and hit the crossbar. 2-2 it finished. It was a brilliant game and an important equaliser for Arsenal boss Unai Emery. He was on the way. Here he comes. Unai, what do you think is going wrong?
The first half, we controlled the game defensively, but not imposed offensively more capacity to battle them. The second half was different than the first 20 minutes, because was the key for to take chances to score, and we had three very, very clear. But we didn't score, and then when they scored the second goal with that penalty, we took a risk to draw. We achieved that, but really we didn't play because we conceded then also chances when we did the second half that change with some players, because we needed to go against them with more players. But now is to analyse and how we can improve and find solution.
An Arsenal fan shouted at me on the way out, "We're Arsenal. We've got to be beating Southampton. We've got to be closer to the top four." What's your answer to that man?
They help us. And I can say to them, they help us. They were back us in 90 minutes. And also, we tried to show them and to connect with them. First, playing well. Second, with good result. But we lost a very good opportunity today.
Thank you very much.
Now, who says you can't play in the Europa League on a Thursday and then deliver in the Premier League at the same time? Wolves fifth after another 3 points. Jonathan Overend.
And undefeated in eight now in the Premier League, Wolves earning this with a dominant first half display and brilliantly executed goals from Moutinho, direct from an acute angle free kick, and Jimenez after a wonderful one-touch set-piece move. And with Simon Francis sent off for two yellow cards in that first half, Bournemouth were in disarray. But they were much better in the second. Steve Cook headed one back at the near post. Nathan Ake thought he'd equalised, but for a reaction stop from Rui Patricio. And Danjuma had a glorious chance in the final seconds. It made for a thrilling finale when, in truth, Wolves should have been allowed a 3-0 lead. Diogo Jota, well onside early in the second half, was flagged offside, and the referee blew his whistle fractionally before Jota struck past Ramsdale. So it ended close, but in truth, Wolves were very good value for this latest 3 points.
Yeah, another 3 points for Wolves. Watford, bottom of the table. Comprehensive home defeat to Burnley. 3-0 it was, watched by Sahail Sari.
Yeah, Burnley made it successive 3-0 wins and a first away victory in the Premier League since April, Mark. Forget the first half, it wasn't the best. This was all about the second 45 minutes. Chris Wood, he opened the score in his sixth of the season. The second and the controversial moment in the game, it was a VAR awarded penalty. Ashley Barnes was stripped by Jose Holabas. Play continued to the opposite end of the ground. Paul Tierney stopped play. He awarded a penalty to Burnley, and Ashley Barnes joined his strike partner Chris Wood on 6 goals for the season. James Tarkowski, he made it 3 moments later, and a nice return for Sean Dyche to Watford. I spoke to Ashley Barnes and he says it was a good day for Burnley.
Massive achievement, you know. It was long awaited, and it was glad that we got 3 points.
First half wasn't the best, but you clicked into gear in the second.
Yeah, I think we were quite sloppy the first half. You know, they were on top. As long as we stayed in the game, we knew we could we knew longer the game went on, we'll have chances. We didn't have many chances the first half, but the second half was a lot better, and we've come on top.
Your strike partner scored his sixth of the season. You eventually scored your sixth as well. Can you talk us through that? Because you initially got fouled by Holubas in the penalty area. Then the action reverted to your penalty box. VAR intervened and you converted.
Yeah, I've got booted from Holubas in obviously the area. We went down the other end. I was screaming at the ref just to please have a look at it. I've got booted, and lucky enough that the VAR has gone back to the other end and we got the penalty.
Ashley Barnes with Sahail Sait. The Scottish Premiership next, 3 points for Celtic. Roddy Forsyth.
Yes, indeed, and today's card signalled the start of the most intense passage of the domestic season in Celtic's case, with the chance to move 3 points ahead of Rangers, who played at Hamilton. But it wasn't a given against the Livingston side, who arrived as the only domestic opponents to beat the Hoops in this campaign. A repeat was never likely once Edouard opened the scoring with a neat lob over Sarkic. After the break, Scott Brown made it 2-0, helped by a wild deflection, and James Forrest's double ensured there would be a gap at the top of the table at least for 24 hours. Elsewhere, the Edinburgh sides had contrasting fortunes. Under new manager Jack Ross, Hibs fell behind at home to Paul Wasp's goal for Motherwell, but they recovered with strikes from Doidge, Camberry and Horgan for a 3-1 win that puts them into the top six. Hearts, though, still without a manager, were battered at Kilmarnock, who won at Rugby Park with a double from 35-year-old Chris Burke and a goal from Eamon Brophy. In the other game, St Mirren won with a 2-1 victory at home to Ross County. That took them off the bottom of the table. Ross County's goal from Brian Graham was, remarkably, the first Saints had conceded from open play at home since April the 27th. That's one for the Statos.
Also in the Scottish Cup, three Lowland League teams. That's the fifth level of the Scottish pyramid, through to the fourth round. So BSC Glasgow came from 3-1 down at East Fife to win 4-3. Ooh, that was close. Bonnyrigg Rose beat Montrose 2-1. East Kilbride 4-0 winners as well at Fourmartine. Broxburn Athletic of the East of Scotland League are also through. They won 1-0 at Inverurie Loco Works. What are you laughing at, Chris Sutton? I can see you giggling.
What was the name of that team again? The one beginning with F?
East Kilbride.
No, the one
Broxburn
beginning with
Athletic.
F. No, F.
4 months, 4 months, four. Anyhow, now, of course, every Saturday and Sunday, you can give your views to the 606 team. Alistair Bruce Ball and Chris Sutton are here every week on Five Live. They also do their own wonderful podcast as well. Ali.
Yes, good evening.
You all right? Do you want to hear from fans of 4 months, 4 months?
Chris has just arrived, so he's sped across London to be here. And Chris, you've come in, and the first thing you've said to me, which I love, is incredible day. Let me start with Jose Mourinho. He's back. He started with a win. He left Christian Eriksen out. He went with Winks and Dyer in central midfield. What did you make of it?
Yeah, it was a good start against a really poor West Ham team. You have to say that.
Do you think it's a risk?
Yes,
I think it's a
massive risk off the back of, you know, the job which he did at Manchester United. Are we going to see the cranky old, mopey old Mourinho, which we saw there, falling out with players, this, that and the other? Or are we going to see the Mourinho of the past when he first came to these shores?
OK, in terms of other managers, Chris, actually, it's going to be more managers under pressure. So I'm thinking Unai Emery, I'm thinking Manuel Pellegrini, and I'm thinking Marco Silva. You watched the Everton-Norwich game.
Yeah, and Everton playing the bottom team, Norwich. Norwich were the better team. Everton fans singing at the end of the game, you're getting sacked in the morning. Everton were given a silver spoon, weren't they, at first? Are they getting the wooden spoon?
Oh, look at that, Mark. He's on form. We've just been having a little argument as well, Mark, about the VAR call for the disallowed Palace goal. The first one, the James Tompkins header. I said foul, pushed by RU. And you're saying no, Chris?
Absolutely no foul. The goal should have stood.
Not a foul, so you can push people over in the area.
Well, what will happen there, Bruce, is every time there's a corner kick or a free kick that fouls will be given. Was it a clear and obvious error?
Yes. Maybe
rubbish.
Maybe it will clean up the game.
Rubbish.
Maybe it will clean up the game. People will stop fouling.
Bruce. It's not tiddlywinks, is it?
Thank you very much. By the way, when he sped across London, did he do it on a small horse?
Come on. Yeah, well...
Yeah.
I mean, I really wouldn't be bringing up horses.
All right. Am I right in saying, Mark, that you didn't know the difference between a pony and a foal? Is that right?
I know what a foal is. I know what a pony is.
Right.
I can't necessarily tell them apart. Anyhow, back to the football. Thank you.
The Football Daily from BBC Sport and BBC Five Live.
Let's round up everything that's gone on in the Football League. Starting in the Championship, Neil Harris beginning his campaign as Cardiff manager with a draw at Charlton. They came from two goals down to salvage a point. Let's hear from him.
Just felt at half time we had to change and adapt and try and give the boys a little bit of belief by adjusting something. So we matched the diamond in midfield, and second half I thought was fully deserved. They've got the ability to come from behind, which is key in any situations. They've got that spirit within the camp. We've got some very good players that can impact from the start and come off the bench. I've learned all week. You know, Monday was a tough day, a slow start for us. Tuesday, you know, they're getting to know my methods, you know, the way I want to be organised and disciplined. Everything's about the culture and environment and structure and, you know, growing as a group. And we'll get better and better.
We talk about the new manager effect, Mark Clement, don't we? And good point for Cardiff there. Good win for Michael O'Neill in his first game, home game in charge.
Yeah, it could have been even better for Cardiff, couldn't it? Because Junior Hoylett missed a penalty in that one. 51 of the 91 managers in the top four divisions have been appointed in the last 12 months. I'll just let that sit out there. Good first point. And yeah, I think the interesting thing about Michael O'Neill's second consecutive win, beating Stoke by 2-1, is that his winner was scored by Mamabiram Diouf, who had been training with the under-23s under the previous regime, was brought back, came off the bench with 8 minutes to go and scores the winner. You know, everything is opened back up to everybody who's at that club. And that is one hell of a lot of players, Mark, as anybody associated with that club will say. They've got a huge squad.
I mean, they've still got, I mean, from what I was reading today, I mean, they've still got players like Mbula and Kevin Wimmer who are out on loan still.
Absolutely out on loan. I mean, then this is the problem when you chop and change your managers all the time. You end up with eight of his players, and then Michael O'Neill's job is to cohesively try and bind them together.
At the top of the table, West Brom squeaked past Sheffield Wednesday a little bit, 2-1, Leeds back into the top two at Preston's expense.
Yeah, and a little bit of daylight at the top of the table. And it's a very different model for West Brom this season, isn't it? Because last season they had Dwight Gayle and Jay Rodriguez. So they were the only team with two 20-goal-plus strikers in the top four divisions. So this is a whole load tighter. I think the top scorer is on six. But they've managed to get past there today. And just Leeds recovering, because just in the middle of their run of games so far, they had a little tiny blip, but they've won four of their last six. They're definitely going to be in the mix again, without a doubt.
Just look at one of the other eye-catching results, and that comes at Accrington Stanley, where they won 7-1, but Bolton actually took the lead in that,
and had a player sent off. But the thing I love about this, and they had three players who got a brace in that game, was they hadn't scored in the preceding 409 minutes. It's some way to crack your duck, isn't it? We must mention Gareth Ainsworth, Wickham getting a late win against Doncaster. I mean, I think it's 8 points to third in the League One table now. Remarkable. In stark contrast, poor old Russ Martin at MK Dons, 2-0 up, heading for the first win in 11 matches, and end up losing 3-2 to Rotherham. And also, poor old Sol Campbell, what has he taken on? Lost five in a row, Southend, lost eight of their last nine, 15 of their games so far this season. And with 18 games gone, they're on minus 35 goals.
Conceded 52 goals already.
It's remarkable. It is.
Mark, thank you. Don't forget then, Premier League Sunday, the only place to hear Sheffield United against Manchester United. All the build up from 12:30, kick off at 4:30. Thanks to everybody for appearing on the brand new Sunday episode of the Football Daily Pod.
The Football Daily from BBC Sport and BBC Five Live.